You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
We've all heard at some point or another financial jargon describing the role of probability in financial markets, or more commonly known as black swans or white swans. But today, we bring you a new take on this theme. It's called the blank swan, which rejects the notion of probability altogether in financial markets. And the author's name is Eli Ayash, and we speak to him in London. Eli, good of you to join us. Your book is quite unique in the sense that it's a new take on the white swan and black swan theory, that is, predictable and unpredictable events which define stock and option prices. But in essence, your theory is that events happen as a result of the context of that period and are therefore non-reproducible. What gave rise to this theme?
The idea actually to criticize the whole framework of prediction, black swans or white swans alike. It comes from the fact that I have noticed in my practice of derivative pricing and trading that actually the main problem in probability theory, on which financial theory, orthodox financial theory, has been based all the time, its main problem is that it tries to identify scenarios in the world. It projects those scenarios and it assigns probabilities to them, whereas in reality, what the event is going to be one scenario that was not part of the previous list of scenarios. That's what's a blank swan. So maybe part of the solution is to dispense altogether with the idea of identifying scenarios and try to build, if you will, a technology whereby you can predict the future without identifying scenarios, first of all, and assigning probability to them. And I argue in the book that the market of financial derivatives or contingent claims is something that human beings have invented without the theory, which can provide us of such an alternative way of looking at the future without the intermediation of identifiable scenarios. That's what I try to argue in the book. That's why the book is also metaphysical in a sense. So it's a philosophy book, not only a financial book.
Well, let's talk about the impact of your theories in a few minutes and the ramifications of that on the existing structures. But let's talk about in the early part of your career when you were an options trader. And in fact, apparently on the day you started work, that's when Black Monday happened, October 19th.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I was fortunate or unfortunate, I don't know, enough to actually start trading in the pit of options in 87 in Paris, October 19th. So that was exactly when the crash happened. And because it was my first day, I came back from the pit with the feeling that it was a normal day because it was my first day. Yeah, when I returned to the trading room of the bank, it's there that I learned that we had lost all this money because the bank I was involved with was one of the largest market makers of options in Paris. So we lost a lot of money, and the next day all the big market makers had to close their shops and no longer to make market, except for the bank I was working with, who very bravely decided to continue making markets. Of course, the bid and ask spreads have become huge the next day and the following months, and we ended up the following week making tenfold more money than we had lost on the day of the crash, which was completely illuminating to me. So the main idea is that if you are immersed in the market and you no longer care about predicting the event or what, even after the event, because you are still making markets, you can still make back the money that you have lost just, you know, by trading those up.
And of course, Eli, the bank you were referring to was the Bank Indosuez in Paris, right? On that day in 1987, actually, the Black-Scholes formula failed, yeah? Can you give us a bit of background on exactly what this formula is and what led, you know, to basically the life-changing experience in global finance on that particular day?
Until that day, like the formula started being popular on the Oplitz from 73-4 until 80-87. And the common way, the standard way that every market maker was using the formula, of course, is to plugging in a number, which is the volatility of the underlying, and computing the option theoretical value as a result. Whereas what happened in 87 was that all of a sudden option started trading independently, if you will, from each other. So like out of the money puts started trading at premiums which had no comparison with the premiums of at the monies. And this is what when the volatility smiles, as we call them, emerge. And volatility smile is the phenomena whereby options of different strike prices and different maturities, if you look at the prices that are trading on those options in the market empirically, you find that those prices do not reflect a unique volatility number like the Black-Scholes theory says it should be. Therefore, it's as if every option starts trading with a Black-Scholes formula of its own. And this is why the theory fails, because the theory can only work if there is a single volatility number, which is actually the volatility of the underlying, which is supposed to govern all the pricing of all options. So from 87, the market makers learned the hard way that they can no longer just imagine that volatility is some theoretical number and price all options with that. And they learned that it's on the contrary, the market that is going to dictate on them what the prices of different options are, especially out of the money options, which were very popular during the crash, because obviously everyone wanted to buy protection. So the market maker learns that they should from now on actually use the Black-Scholes formula in reverse, by actually taking the option price as it is traded in the market as a given and inverting the formula to compute what they call the implied volatility instead of using it the way the theory prescribes.
So in the months and days that followed the crash in 1987, you are saying that the bank industry is where you worked, continued the business and made a whole bunch of cash. Did you use this formula? I mean, did you employ this new theory?
From that day on, actually, from 87 until even today, all the market makers are still using Black-Scholes. That's the irony of the thing. However, every single one of them are using it in reverse, meaning no one is like dictating the volatility to the market. On the other, all of the market makers are using the formula. They plug the prices of the options that they are getting from the market in it. And the reason why we still use the formula is, as a market maker, you still need to compute the dynamic hedge. That's the crucial thing. So that's why when we were at in the Suez and all the other market makers who slowly started to reopen their business later, and this is how the whole volatility smile emerged, is that people could not discard Black-Scholes as easily as it sounded, because as a market maker, you still needed the model in order to compute the dynamic hedge. So to me today, that's the most important thing. Black-Scholes formula, nobody uses it to compute the price of the option. This you get from the market, so the market itself kind of finds the price of contingent claims and of options. However, as a dynamic market maker and a dynamic hedger, you need the formula, only you will use it the other way around in order to compute your hedge, because only if you are dynamically hedging your option every tick and every second, can you, as a market maker, price the next option and answer to the next client, etc. So the big irony is that everyone is using the formula the other way around. Therefore, everyone is contradicting the assumption of the model every second that they are using the formula. But no one wants to discard the formula because it's still robust in the sense of delivering the hedges. Now, if you want to be theoretical about it, what the quantitative community has tried to do from 87 until today is to find models that were more complex and more comprehensive than Black-Scholes in order to explain scientifically, if you will, the phenomena. So that's how they started working out models where volatility was stochastic or where you had the jumps and the underlying. So this is how the quantitative community started growing in finance, and a lot of mathematicians and physicists started converging on the field. But however, every single one of those mathematicians and the quants, as we call them, they wanted to find a more comprehensive model than Black-Scholes. And according to me, they went in the wrong direction, philosophically speaking, because they were all looking for a model that says, well, the underlying is not following constant volatility like Black-Scholes wanted. It is following just a process that were a little bit more complex. Whereas the thing is that no matter how complex the model that you end up devising, and there are a lot of models that were proposed. I mean, the company I'm involved with today, ITO33, basically does this all the time. I mean, models. No matter how complex the model is, ultimately you are also going to use it in reverse, because ultimately you are also going to plug into it the prices of options, and it's not you who are going to impose your theory on the market. It's the other way around. So we'll find the same problem as in Black-Scholes, except you are taking it to the next level.
In the days that followed 1987, what you're saying is that a lot of people tried to evolve Black-Scholes, but still included an element of probability in there, yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Till today, everyone is still using some complex form of a kind of Black-Scholes model.
Okay.
Including probability, of course.
So now our question to you is, as a layman, we understand that derivatives are basically instruments based on an underlying asset. Now, if what you say holds water and probability as we know it doesn't exist, then basically an entire financial industry is trying to put some values on assets and instruments based on a theory that doesn't really work. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I mean, it's deeper than this. The theory works because the mathematical theory of probability is very good, except that the philosophical foundation of it do not apply to the market. The philosophical foundation of it is that you want, before starting to apply any probability model, be it Black-Scholes or something more complex, you have to identify the different scenarios. For instance, Black-Scholes, you have to identify the different prices that the underlying can trade at, right? That's the basis. If you build a more sophisticated model than Black-Scholes, say a stochastic volatility model like Heston or whatever, you need to identify on top of the different prices of the underlying, you need to identify the different values that volatility itself is going to reach, etc., etc.
Eli, it's time for a break now, but when we come back, let's examine your theory in greater detail. On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are speaking with Eli Ayash, the author of The Blank Swan. In plain English, for the layman at play here.
Sure.
Now, how can the layman investor apply these theories that you are proposing or suggesting in everyday investing?
I mean, my observation is that actually the market of contingent claims or the market of derivative is by itself a much more sophisticated theory, if you will, of probability than probability theory. What I'm saying is that we should take prices to be the basis, and no longer some theoretical assumption about probabilities. So it's kind of trivial. You are telling me the only way to price options is by going to the market of options. It's true. However, it's not as trivial and as empty as it sounds, because you still need to be quantitative about it, because you still need to use probability models, if only to compute the dynamic hedge. I'm not at all dismissing probability models and dismissing the technology of derivative pricing. As I said, my whole book is dedicated to the defense of the probability models, except that they should be used in reverse. You should not believe in them. You should only use them as a market maker. And to my mind, I'm sorry to say so, only market makers of options can consistently make money on options. If some investor is buying options and trying to take a bet, chances are he will lose money or make money depending on whether he's lucky or not. This is what Nassim Taleb, criticized in his book. No one can predict the market. The only way, according to me, that you can get involved in option markets and make money consistently is by being a market maker, and therefore you have to consistently use the models like Black-Scholes and the like. However, use them in a funny way, which is continuously use them in reverse and recalibrate them into the market. And my book tries to lay down the foundation of what this technology and how market makers are using those probability models always in reverse and always recalibrating them to the market. The key word here is recalibration of the model to the market prices of options.
Okay. Eli, if we were to keep this discussion on the underlying assets, which is, for example, the stock market is one of the most common ones, how do we apply your theory to investing in stock markets, which ultimately are what derivatives are based on, most of them anyway?
I mean, funnily enough, I'm a derivative expert. I'm not an expert, if you will, in the underlying itself. One of the ironic conclusions of my work, if you will, is that in the end, derivatives should come first, prior to the underlying somehow. So unfortunately, I mean, the news that I'm breaking here is to say that in order even maybe to have views on the underlying, you need to, if possible, of course, integrate as much information as you could on the derivatives that are actually liquidly trading on that underlying, meaning if you are trading in equity, say, you cannot dispense with some derivative pricing tools which from the option prices that are trading on that underlying. And if it's a single name equity also, including the prices of the CDSs, the credit default swaps, is also crucial. Because today we live in a financial credit crisis. So how can you try to build trading instincts about some instrument or invest in some underlying and not take into account what the market of the credit default swaps or the market of out-of-the-money puts are telling you relative to that underlying?
But Ali, that is the irony, because what you're suggesting here is that the quantitative traders, the quants, for example, should be the ones leading the underlying, the assets, the equity market, and so on and so forth. But the irony is that a lot of the trouble that the world finds itself in nowadays has really been caused by the quants like yourselves, because only the quants have been smart enough to think of instruments that no one really understood. And that's part of the reason why people lost money in the first place. So why should people put their money in with quants again? Does it make sense?
No, I mean, I disagree with what you are saying here. The quants, there are two categories of quants. I'm completely against the quants who invented the very sophisticated and complex derivatives like CDOs, you know, the subprime things, etc., which are very complex. And I argue in my book that those derivatives, I do not even call derivatives myself, because there is no way you can hedge them dynamically and calibrate them to the market. And you will find that Nassim Taleb himself in several interviews also dismisses those derivatives, because to them they are toxic, because you cannot price them except by probability theory. And let's not forget that I'm arguing against probability theory. However, simple derivatives like vanilla options, calls and puts, and these are the only options that I'm specialized in, by the way. I've been in the market for 23 years. I've only dealt with vanilla options, and the models that my company today is developing is to price and to extract as much information as you can from vanilla options. And credit default swaps is also something that I call a vanilla instrument, because it's very key as an instrument. So to me, what should be kept are the simple derivatives like vanilla calls and puts, credit default swaps, digital options. You know, digital options are very good, because they, you know what a digital option is. If you hit a barrier, you get a payoff. These are the things that should be the building blocks of the derivatives. And to me, even if you are an investor in the underlying only, you have to include information about what the liquid markets of the CDS and of the vanilla products are telling you. I'm not saying you have to turn into a trader of options, leave that to the market makers. However, you have to include the information that you are getting from those markets.
So your suggestion is to keep derivatives easy, which is what you're doing, and you have been doing for the last 23 years. Now, does your theory, which is essentially Black-Scholes in reverse, does your theory work in the underlying market, which is the stock market, for example?
I mean, let's face it, the stock market is related to the fundamental values of the companies, etc. So, of course, the stock market is independent of derivatives. I'm not saying that you have to reverse also the logic of the market. All I'm saying is that if you are an investor in the stock market, you have to include information on the derivatives. You cannot buy a stock and not look at the fact that maybe the implied volatilities on options is 100%. It's a different situation if it's 100% or if a volatility swap is trading at 100%, different to if it's 20%. So you have to take that into account. Of course, I mean, if you want to invest in a stock, I mean, the stock ultimately depends on the fundamentals of the company, of the economy, etc. I'm not questioning this. I'm not saying even the economical analysis should be discarded and we all should do derivatives. However, today the derivatives market have become so important in terms of size and in terms of liquidity, and to me the derivatives market is ultimately what is leading us to what is connecting us to the future. So the derivatives markets are very important. You cannot discard them because on account that derivatives are toxic. it's key to keep the derivatives markets, because that's the only way that we could have a technology, which is this market, which tells us what's going to unfold in the future. However, we are only talking, again, I must insist, on derivatives that are simple, like vanilla options and CDSs and stuff like that. The quants that everyone is fighting today are the people who, in a sense, worked in a complete disconnect from the market. They were working in their offices, building very fancy probabilistic models based on correlation and on copula functions, etc., in order to price the CDOs. These guys have had no connection with what a market maker in the pits of Chicago, say, would do every day. The market maker in the pits of Chicago, these are the guys that should be kept alive and trading, because these are the guys who are basically trading options without even a model, because they don't care about the model. They will use it in reverse. All they care to do is be dynamically hedging the options and making markets second after second.
In case you've just joined us, we are speaking with Eli Ayashi, the author of The Blank Swan, and he's speaking to us from London in the UK. So, Eli, what you're suggesting is the importance of derivatives in today's financial markets, yeah? Can you try and bridge the gap for our listeners as to how exactly to impute some of your theories into, I guess, investing in the markets in this day and age?
I'm saying that you should be using tools which are based on probability, no doubt, except that they should use them in reverse, tools like Black-Scholes, and try to infer from the traded prices of liquid options and liquid derivatives, such as vanilla calls and puts or credit default swaps on single-name equities, say, you should try to infer what the markets of those things tell you about the if you will, the future scenarios that can happen to that stock, to that underlying stock. Derivatives are very sophisticated in the good sense of the term, and to my mind, the markets of derivatives are what should replace probability theory. On the contrary, probability theory should be used as an aside. All I'm saying is that you cannot, as an investor, even in the underlying stock, disregard the information that you are getting from simple vanilla options that are traded consistently by market makers on the floors or in the markets.
Well, are there enough people that are sophisticated enough to employ the techniques that you just suggested in our financial markets? I mean, especially in places like Asia, where it's you know, still underdeveloped in many parts of the region.
If you are sophisticated enough to use Black-Scholes, to me it's enough. I mean, Black-Scholes in itself, if you know how to use it, meaning if you know what is the meaning of the volatility smile, which is the fact that options of different strikes could have different implied vols, then you are sophisticated enough. So yes, at least you have to be able to infer what we call implied volatility and try to understand what does it mean that options of different strikes, say out of the money options, what does it mean that they should trade at implied volatilities that are different from options at the money? So this is the level of sophistication I think that is minimum in order to take advantage of the markets, of the derivatives markets. When I say that the derivatives market is very sophisticated, I'm not saying this in order to discourage people. I'm saying that it's sophisticated because it's as if it was a pair of binoculars that we have in order to look at the future. I mean, it's very important in the market to know what the future is made of. This is what the whole market is all about. You cannot dismiss the market and say, I'm going to get rid of derivatives, because it's as if you were, you know, shutting off the light in the room and no one is able to see what the future is made of. So instead of trying to predict the future with probability theory and with econometric models and stuff like that, and this is what Nassim Taleb is criticizing, so I completely agree with him, instead of this, we should look at the derivative prices and markets. And they are more sophisticated than probability theory because there is a richness and there is a liquidity in the market that you will not find in probability, of course. However, we should keep them and look at them in an empirical way, using the models only to be able to dynamically hedge the options.
Okay, so in other words, the importance of derivatives in I guess, everyday trading. That was Eli Ayash, the author of The Blank Swan, which is a financial derivatives book. I'm Ku Su Chuang for BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.